Alaska City Council meeting. This time I'll ask the City Council members to introduce themselves, starting with Councilman Coleman.
Good afternoon. My name's Sherry Coleman. Been a resident of Alaska about 25 years. I currently work in the seafood processing sector, and I have been on council for about 9 years now. Welcome.
Councilman Luby, thank you.
My name is Deneen Luby. I've been a council member for about 5 years now. I've lived in the city of Unalaska for around 35 years, and I have a couple of different businesses in town, and that's about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Chastain.
Thank you. My name is Zach Chastain. This is my third term on the Unalaska Council, Unalaska City Council. I came out here in 1978, left for a little while, and came back.
Thank you, Councilman. Next, we've got Councilman Bell.
Yeah, my name is Thomas Bell. I've been a resident of Unalaska now for about 25 years. Served this community on the City Council now, coming up on about 6 years. Thank you.
Thank you. And next, we have one possibly on the remote is Councilman Longo. Introduction.
Yes, hi. My name is Anthony Longo. Been a resident of Unalaska since about 2011. I'm a crane maintenance foreman for one of our ship-to-shore cranes out here, and I've been on city council for a little over 2 years now. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Councilman Longo. My name is Vince Tudikoff, Sr. I'm the mayor for City of Unalaska. I'll turn this over to Mr. Thomas Young.
Thank you, Mayor. Bart, if you have the bandwidth, please turn your camera on. I know that we have some bandwidth issues in Unalaska, so we're keeping their cameras off.
Okay, yeah, on my end, I am clicking to turn the camera on, and it appears it's disabled on your end.
Right. Okay, understood. We'll see if that changes throughout the course of this interview. Thank you, Bart. Bart, thank you for joining us today. I did want to just provide a quick overview of our process today, and then we'll jump into our questions. We have 90 minutes scheduled for this interview. We have 19 scripted questions. We might not take the full 90 minutes, but we cannot take more than 90 minutes for your interview. The council will have the opportunity to ask follow-up questions after your answers. You will need to manage your time, but I will help you by providing time checks throughout this process. I might end up limiting council questions if those start to take up too much time, and have them ask those questions if there's any time remaining at the end of your interview. You will also have time to ask questions of your own at the end of this process. With 19 questions and the time we have available, we're looking around 3 to 4 minutes an answer on average. But for this first question, it's a two-part question. We've allocated some extra time for you. With that said, we will begin your questions. So, Bart, can you please tell us about yourself and your background and what interests you about living and working in a remote Aleutian Island community such as Unalaska?
Yes, thank you. And before I jump into that intro, I just want to say thank you for your time here today. It's been a very professional process. So I thank you. I thank Mr. Mayor and the council for that. As an applicant, that's all we can ask. I've been very well informed, and it's obvious that your intention is to find the best applicant with competency and fit. That being said, my name is Bart Hinkle. I was born and raised in Fairbanks. Except for my college years, I've spent my life living and working in Alaska communities. After earning a degree in business administration with an emphasis in accounting, I returned to Alaska and worked as an accountant for a CPA firm in Anchorage. That position allowed me to travel throughout many rural and remote Alaska communities performing auditing services, particularly in Western Alaska. It gave me an appreciation for the unique challenges, opportunities, and vast beauty of our state. However, I knew I did not want to live in Anchorage, and I was not looking forward to 30, 40 years as an accountant. So I'm going to date myself a little bit here. Flipping through the ADN one day, and in the Help Wanted section, I saw an advertisement for a Valdez police officer position. I went down to Kinko's, polished off my resume, printed it, mailed it in, and that began my career in Valdez. I started there in July of 99, and I remained with the city of Valdez until May of 2025. During that time, I had the opportunity to serve in every rank within the police department. I became the chief of police in 2016. Final 2 years of my municipal career, I went well beyond public safety as I served as the interim assistant city manager, the assistant city manager, and ultimately the interim city manager. So as assistant city manager and interim manager, I was responsible for citywide leadership, departmental oversight other than my own, budget development across four or five different departments, strategic planning, and supporting the city council and accomplish its priorities. So why I bring that up to you is because I do have a strong public safety background. However, I also have good executive municipal leadership experience that's been developed throughout progressively broader responsibilities through the course of my career. When I retired from Valdez in 2025, I knew it wasn't the end of my public service career. I just wanted the opportunity to carefully consider what my next chapter is going to be and where. And through my conversations with you, Mr. Young, my research into this position, I became increasingly struck by the similarities and parallels between Valdez and Unalaska. The more I learned about it, the more I felt it was a community where I could contribute personally and professionally, continue to grow professionally, and it was a community with significant opportunities, meaningful challenges, and a strong sense of identity similar to what I had come from the last 26 years. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I look forward to discussing how my experience, leadership philosophy, and commitment to Alaska communities may be of value to the city of Unalaska.
Thank you, Bart. Council, are there any follow-up questions?
Do we have any follow-up questions for Mr. Hinkle? Councilman Coleman?
Thank you. Thanks for joining us here this afternoon. I'm sure you're going to expand on that probably some more as we get into the questions. But quickly, you said the similarities between Unalaska and Valdez. Could you name a couple that you feel are pertinent?
Yeah. Thank you for that. Well, community size for one, it's very similar to community size and an organization size, quite frankly, and frankly, operational budget. And they're both communities dominated by one industry, I would say. Obviously both a maritime focused to degree, Valdez less or so on the processing side, coastal communities. And from my time with the police department, even the Valdez Police Department and the Unalaska Department of Public Safety, mirrored each other quite a bit in size, and at the time that I started, structure, and scheduling the 712s and things like that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Any further questions or of Mr. Hinkle? No, continue.
Thank you. Moving on to question two. Please describe your understanding of the council-manager form of government and, more importantly, the appropriate relationship between the city manager, mayor, and council members.
Yeah, thank you. So, obviously, the city manager, as well as staff and deputy city manager, is going to work to provide professional insight and work with council on their priorities. Essentially, put bluntly, the council is going to say the what of what needs to be done, and the city manager will kind of direct the how we achieve those. There will be frequent communication between the city manager, and my experience has been primarily the mayor, just that conduit of information, acts as a buffer between staff and council, but works at the directive of the majority of the council. An individual member can request a pretty mundane item like something to be added to the agenda without an issue, but any big initiatives and things like that require multiple council members and majority to provide direction for city manager, who will then provide direction for staff and achieve said priority.
Thank you, Bart. Any follow-up questions from the council?
Any questions? No, we're no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Mayor. Bart, please tell us about a time when elected officials wanted something you believed was operationally risky, financially unsound, or inconsistent with policy. How did you handle that?
Okay, well, unfortunately, I have one I think that covers all three, and that was during the COVID era, and I won't bring that up all the time because it was a bit of an anomaly, but it was a thing for sure. And at the time, our mayor was also the hospital administrator, so you can imagine what kind of stress that individual was under. But some of the, obviously, the misinformation and the stuff that was going around, I was serving as the chief of police, but I was also the operations section chief of our incident management team at that time, which we had stood up for that process. And so there were a number of things that were discussed in open council meetings that were, quite frankly, illegal and violated rights of individuals. And unfortunately, it had to happen in an open meeting to where that had to be discussed for me as a police chief and then also as an operations section chief. Done respectfully so, when we were able to break after meetings or in between, the mayor and I were able to have a pretty frank conversation as to why some of the proposed actions were not wise on the city's behalf.
Thank you, Bart. Are there follow-up questions from the council?
Yes, Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I was just curious if you could elaborate a little bit more on maybe what was being asked that was possibly illegal, and just maybe a little bit more on the circumstances of what happened.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, so one of the things was multiple council members wanted there's one road in and one road out of LD, so there's one point, right? The Richardson Highway, which is a state highway. They wanted a positive ID check set up there by law enforcement so that only those individuals that lived in Valdez and showed certain documents were allowed to get into Valdez. That is not allowed. They wanted, on a less egregious thing, perhaps, we had neighbors calling in neighbors. They wanted different types of curfew put into place. Certain people wouldn't be allowed to go to certain places. And it was just, it was a state of upheaval, but it was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. And from a law enforcement perspective, not wise, and from a city administrative perspective, also not a good idea.
Okay, thanks. I was just a little bit curious on how that all transpired and how you dealt with it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilman. Will we any further questions for Mr. Hinkle? Councilman Coleman?
Yeah, so, I mean, can we specifically look, how did you deal with it? I mean, how did you approach it, and what was your demeanor, and how was it basically resolved?
Yeah, so in an open meeting, I was called up and asked questions, and I was diplomatic in saying the reasons why this was not wise to vote on and enact today. One, because of the reason I just mentioned, that we were running afoul of some personal liberties. And I asked for a break so that we could discuss it off record. And so that was done behind closed doors to where we could have a more frank discussion and, with the mayor, and the city manager at that time, where they could ask pertinent questions and I could give the reasons why from a legal perspective. And this had been discussed and run up through the Alaska State Troopers, as well in their chain of command. So I knew the answer from that perspective. And so I was able to present it in a diplomatic way on record so that we could get a recess or a break so we could go have a very detailed conversation behind closed doors. And then the mayor went forth and basically moved the meeting along and went about the other businesses on the agenda.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Any further questions for Mr. Hinkle? None here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Moving on. Bart, this position has 11 direct reports overseeing highly technical departments. Describe your leadership style and how you manage a diverse executive team.
Yeah, thank you. Some of these departments are ones that I've managed before. Doesn't change the leadership style that I prefer and that I go to, which is primarily the default be the more democratic and servant style, if you will. Basically, highly collaborative. It's very relationship based. You have to develop a strong relationship with those you supervise. I don't need to understand all of the technical details what they do, and I won't understand all of what they're the subject matter experts. I need to understand enough about what they do and how they go about it. With that relationship building within the leadership style, there's a high degree of accountability and a high degree of expectations. And on the flip side of that, there's a high degree of support from me, up to and including, I believe, particularly in remote communities like Valdez, Blue Bend, Alaska, I believe we should be giving our employees, delegating them with the ability to continue job growth, job satisfaction, so they can continue their upward mobility within the organization. That only happens if you give them responsibilities, you give them the training, you give them the opportunities, and you mentor them. That way these mid-level management positions and things like that can be filled internally, because recruitment is such a challenge for communities in certain regards. So, succinctly put, the answer is I prefer collaborative style leadership with a high degree of accountability and frequent communication with those I'm in charge of as to expectations, so there's no surprise.
Thank you, Bart. Follow-up questions from the council?
Any follow-up questions? Mr. Hinkle, none? No further questions at this time.
Bart, what experience do you have managing labor relations, employee morale, recruitment, and retention in difficult labor markets?
Yeah, thank you. I spoke to this briefly a little bit, at least part of it, the recruitment and retention. And we concentrate on recruitment a lot, but I do think that retention gets overlooked sometimes in difficult labor markets. And so we're going to classify Valdez and Alaska that in the same. So I have extensive experience in dealing with recruitment and retention issues, particularly in law enforcement. I think that's indicative of the amount of vacancies that you have in your department. We're seeing fewer and fewer qualified applicants. It's a challenge, for sure. Employee morale goes along with that hand in hand, quite frankly, because when you're short staffed, that requires those on staff to work overtime hours and you run the risk of burnout. I don't have any direct experiences in dealing with, unions. Valdez do not have unions, but I've got a lot of experience in dealing with diverse work groups, if you will. Even as the police chief, I had animal control, emergency management, nuisance abatement, dispatch, corrections, and law enforcement under me. And then as I moved up to assistant city manager, had fire, planning, and parks and rec services. And then, of course, as the interim, have more. So I do have a lot of experience in that, not dealing directly as a negotiator with labor relations with the union. But again, employee morale, recruitment and retention are things that I have dealt with quite a bit. And one of the things that I was part of in Valdez that I felt helped all of those issues, morale, recruitment and retention, was clearly identifying goals and objectives and purposes and how their individuals' taskings for the day and projects for the day fit into the bigger picture of what the organization's goals were. And it gave a larger sense of purpose in my mind. And I can speak more on that if you'd like. There was rebranding efforts involved in that. If you go and look, we on my way out the door, I was fortunate enough to get the funding to create a recruitment video for the LDS Police Department. It's on YouTube. It's professionally done. It's phenomenal. It costs money, but in the long run, it's going to pay for itself. What we can't do for recruitment is lower standards.
Thank you, Bart. Questions from the council?
Yes, I have one, Mr. Young. It's regarding Mr. Hinkle's connection. If he'd log out and log back in, get him on board.
Yes, Mr. Hinkle, this is Margie Veter here in Unalaska, and we thought maybe you could try logging out and logging back in, and that maybe your video would work then. I just think that would be very positive for the council to see you answering the questions as well. Would you be willing to try that, please?
Absolutely. I agree. Let me do that right now.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have a couple of minutes here. Relax.
We can see you, Mr. Hinkle. Wonderful. Thank you so much for trying that.
I will see you now. Thank you.
I'm glad that worked. I think where Thanks we are at is any follow-up questions from the council on the last one?
Thank you for logging back in, Mr. Hinkle. We'll ask if there's any follow-up questions on question number 5. Mr. Young, take it over.
Okay. Seeing no follow-up questions on question 5, we'll move to question 6. Bart, remote communities in Alaska face unique challenges involving logistics, weather, workforce recruitment, transportation costs, and supply chain disruptions. What experience do you have managing in similar environments?
Yeah, again, in Valdez, and that's going to be my example for everything. It's my place I've worked. There are parallels. So, and I forget the exact year, but moral of the story is heavy snow year. Imagine that for Valdez, right? But one road in, one road out in Keystone Canyon, we had a slide, basically the length of a football field, the height of 50 or 60 feet come down and wiped out our road. That's our primary way of getting supplies into Valdez is via the Richardson Highway. So again, incident management team, of course the lines for bread and milk and gas are completely backed up and whatnot. So residents did that and same concerns, right? Okay. How are we going to get the necessities we need? Things like that. So I do have experience in that. That's actually happened a number of occasions with different slides, different shutdowns. And when that happens also, we have unreliable air service or had unreliable air service at the time. So that wasn't an option either. So I do have experience in dealing with that. And I believe some of these other questions may address it as well. But when you have those things, it's all the pre-work, right? That's going to pay off then. All your, MOUs or MOAs, your stockpiling of goods and services that you have locally to get through these short interruptions, and then communication with the state if it truly is a local emergency where they can assist. But so I have done that on a number of occasions. We've called it Snowmageddon. We've called it – there's some other things. But through the activation of the incident management team, where I, again, either served as the incident commander or as the operations section chief.
Thank you, Bart. Questions from the council?
Do you have any questions for Mr. Hinkle? No further questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Living and working in a small community often means high visibility and close community relationships. How would you navigate that environment professionally?
Yeah, I've done it for 25 years, and quite frankly, it's one of the reasons I applied, for being honest. I want to be part of the community. That's the type of relationship I want to have with the community, whatever capacity that I'm working for the community in. I would venture to say, well, I know this to be a fact in Valdez, that the police chief was a much more visible person than the city manager. I was just recognized more, one, the longevity of being there. Not only that, but I was the assistant varsity boys basketball coach for 10 years, and I was an adjunct instructor at the college. So being visible is not new to me, and it's nothing to be intimidated about. I live my life accordingly, and I should. The one thing I will say is that maybe in my younger days, I might have struggled with it more, but now I'm comfortable with it in that I'm happy to talk with anybody at any time about city business, whatever. But there is personal time that I have. I'm at a basketball game, watching the basketball game. I'll simply tell a person, may want to have a conversation about some initiative or whatever. I'll say, hey, can you make an appointment on Monday or something? We'll talk. We'll continue this in my office. I'm on my personal time. But other than that, there's absolutely no qualms about me being visible in a small community. It's one of the things I want.
Thank you, Bart. Are there any follow-up questions?
Are there any questions or comments for Mr. Henkel? Councilman Coleman?
So again, being highly visible and obviously very active in your community, you know, public perception kind of plays a role in this. How do you feel? Do you deal with public perception being that, you know, wherever you're at, either at an event, you know, not acting as, you know, city manager, but you're out socially, and how do you feel like your role is when it comes to people seeing you, you know, outside of the office, and then your behavior and such?
Yeah, I mean, I live my life accordingly, and the fact that I should behave like I'm a representative of the city at all times, and I do so because there's very little distinction. You know, as chief of police, people didn't really distinguish whether you were working or not. You're the chief of police; you're expected to act a certain way. You're the head of the organization; you're expected to act a certain way. Whether you're, you know, in the office 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, or you know, again, at a basketball game on Saturday night, and none of that bothers me. I think I should live my life with integrity and like somebody's watching and evaluating my actions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Any further questions? I have no further questions at this time. Thanks.
Please tell us about a major capital project you managed or oversaw, what challenges arose, and what was the outcome?
Well, the one that comes to mind initially is the total remodel of our dispatch center. So we had a communication center, dispatch center there in the Valdez Police Department. And it's a two-person or two-station dispatch center. And equipment was getting obsolete. It was time to be replaced, right? And so I managed that as a project as the chief of police and in conjunction with the Capitol Facilities Director. And definitely some lessons learned, because we decided we were going to put the dispatch center in the same location where it was. But you can't have disruption of service, obviously. So how do we do this? So we created this kind of temporary dispatch center in the room next to us while the other one was being built in the other room. And we just, if we had to do it over again, we would allow the dispatch center to be where it was, continuing operating, and totally build a new one in the adjacent room, and then flip the switch and do the cutover. Because the back and forth with the technology and then with the contractors that came to do the work, a lot of that stuff was out of our control. So it ended up being let's call it a 6-week temporary dispatch solution. Was much closer to, you know, 3 or 4 months. And we can point back to that earlier question about how that affected employee morale. So that was definitely a thing to deal with.
Thank you, Bart. Does the council have any follow-up questions?
Do you have any follow-up questions for Mr. Hinkle? No further questions at this time.
Bart, Unalaska operates electric, water, wastewater, and solid waste utilities. Describe your experience overseeing public utilities or complex infrastructure systems.
Yeah, so when I was with the assistant city manager in the interim role at the city manager level, Public Works oversaw a portion of these, not the electric. So the other utilities is, I'm familiar with that with Public Works, but I am not familiar with, or I have not directly supervised electric operations because Valdez did not have that under their. But as far as the other ones go, my experience was limited to 18 months or so of dealing with it. But again, the technical expert was the public works director, in which I made sure he had the personnel, the training, and the certifications that he needed to run those. And during my time there, at least there were no issues, in addition to landfill certifications and things like that, but there were no issues and nothing for me to get involved in at that level, I guess.
Thank you, Bart. Are there follow-up questions from the council?
Do you have any questions or further questions on this issue with Mr. Hinkle? There are no further questions on this.
Bart, Unalaska provides police, dispatch, jail, fire, EMS, and DMV services. What experience do you have overseeing public safety operations?
Yeah, so I've done all of those, save the DMV services. There was a DMV office in Valdez for a time. We talked about filling that gap when there weren't people there, but I didn't do that. The other ones, I can say I'm probably at an expert level of that supervision and that knowledge base. And in addition, I had, again, emergency management, nuisance abatement, and animal control under that realm.
All right. Council, any follow-up questions?
No follow-up questions. Thank you.
So just for a time check, we are at the halfway mark. We are doing great on time. Thank you, Council, for limiting your questions. You could probably ask more if you so desired, and thank you, Bart, for keeping your answers concise. Moving on to question 11. What is your philosophy regarding the relationship between public safety departments and the community they serve?
Yeah, I touched on this briefly, but I believe they are the fabric of the community. They're the most visible component of government out there. And the thing is that they're not identified necessarily as individuals, but you see a uniform. So you're only as strong as your weakest link, so to speak, or the one that has the least amount of perception of the public. And the other thing is, and this was mandated in Valdez, they had to live in the community. They have to be part of the community. Things like coaching basketball was encouraged, coaching basketball in uniform, going to a planning and zoning meeting while in uniform on duty if somebody else can cover, that was encouraged. If the first time somebody is seeing you is when you're taking enforcement action, we as a public safety agency have done something wrong. We should be breaking down barriers and humanizing the uniform. It's part of the reason we have an SRO, school resource officer. Post-COVID, we're having an issue with kids wanting to come back to school and stuff. We actually purchased a miniature golden doodle as our comfort dog. And so sent him to school with the school resource officer. And it humanizes the officers in such a manner, and it breaks down any barriers. It's one of the reasons I got into coaching. It was just another layer of relationship that wasn't police chief or police officer. And at that time, high school adolescent boys, many of whom wanted and needed a positive male role model in their life. And that was some of the most fulfilling work I've done.
Thank you, Bart. Council, do you have any follow-up questions?
Councilman Chasti.
Thank you. Question. So the question is public safety departments and the community they serve. What's your take on cross-training police? For a long time, the Unalaska Department of Public Safety, which recently transitioned to the Unalaska Police Department, had a significant number of officers that were cross-trained in EMS and fire. What's your take on something along those lines?
Yeah, and this is thank you for asking that. This is another one of those parallels because Valdez used to be the Valdez Department of Public Safety prior to my time. So we're talking oil spill timeline, right? But so as a need to have more people, they created this cross training. I have some thoughts on that, and this is Valdez specific, I guess, where we talked about relaxing standards. So that applies. The other thing is, for decades after, we dealt with the community perception that there were 45 police officers, because we're a department of 12, very similar sized. So I think it skews it in that regard for the public. Again, I mentioned they see the uniform, but they do get to eventually know the faces and stuff of their police officers. And when it's always a different face, it gets the perception that there's a lot of them out there. I think that format, I know that like airports still have a cross-trained section, but I think in a municipality, I think it's antiquated and it works against you in recruiting, and maybe even retention efforts, but certainly recruiting. The amount of training that's put upon law enforcement alone, it gets more and more each year. It continues to be more. And then not even mentioned the EMS side. So I think it ultimately works against an organization to have that. And I have followed some of the efforts to go to the Unalaska Police Department. My personal opinion is I think it's a good idea to go that way. I think it should happen. And I do have some ideas to have it happen. I have done some of that work as far as distinct route police recruitment.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions, Councilman Coleman?
Thank you. And it kind of actually, so this just kind of goes into management style then. Okay, so then you've had experience, let's just use the cross-training one, that you've had, it's your personal experience through your role at the these that they didn't work for you, you end up being city manager and the police chief comes to you and say, I want to cross train. I'm wondering like how would then you would approach that with the police chief and based off, you know, your experience.
Yeah. And again, my experience was a little while ago, different set of circumstances. And this goes for anything. I may have an idea of something, and I will have some idea of something, but as directors, they're the experts in their thing. And so they come with me and say, hey, here's why I want to do this, and here's the justification for it, and here's how it's going to benefit us. Absolutely. I will fully support that. I will ask questions and say, well, I've experienced this. Have you thought of that? And if the answer is, yeah, we thought about that, but we do this, or if there's justification, I have no agenda or no problem saying, hey, it didn't work for me previously, and here are some of the lessons I've learned from it. Now you can go apply that, and maybe it will work for you, and here, take this into consideration in your modeling of your presentation or your pitch, so to speak.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Any further questions? No further questions at this time.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay. Describe your experience managing municipal budgets, particularly in communities with fluctuating or industry-dependent revenues.
Yeah, thank you. So the the police department I've mentioned, I have more experience dealing with that, obviously, more years, I should say, obviously, almost 10 years as the chief dealing with that, and that was a budget of approximately $6 million, and that included, it's multiple budgets, but within the umbrella of the chief's purview. And then as assistant city manager, you had four more departments on top of that, and then the interim, of course, the entire city. So I do have experience with every component of an individual budget as well as the city budget overall. And when we talk about fluctuating, fluctuating or industry dependent revenues, both on Alaska Valdez are well funded, right? They are, but they're also dependent upon something. And so there's always that what if, and the what if for Valdez, it goes to court routinely. I mean, the tax base, right? It's 20 mils, and it's 20 mils because of the oil terminal, pipeline terminal there. And so, highly dependent upon that being taxed at that manner. If it's some reason the valuation came back significantly lower or whatever, that would be a huge operational change for Valdez. So there's always that little bit of a fluctuation or unknown. But so that's always built into sort of the budget. And then, but again, as a city, roughly, I think the last budget I was a part of there for the city was about $71 million operating budget.
Thank you, Bart. Are there follow-up questions from the council?
Are there any follow-ups? No. We have no questions on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. What experience do you have managing proprietary funds, utility finances, or major grant administration?
Yeah, so the experience that I have is basically supervising, again, the experts in those fields are the ones responsible for it, whether the proprietary funds, you know, the Ports and Harbor Director and watching that. Never needed to get involved other than the knowledge of it and the monitoring of it and the reporting of it through finance to the council, what those were and any changes in rates or anything like that. Grant administration, throughout my time as chief, some of the smaller grants could be handled by directors. And really, like post 9/11, there was a lot of law enforcement grants that we were eligible for, of course. What we saw as a city there was that the directors were starting to go out and procure these grants and get the grants with little plan or thought as to replacement cycle of whatever they're getting for the grant or the grant administration on the back end. So what was happening is some of that stuff was falling through the cracks on the finance side. The administration wasn't being done. The reporting wasn't being done properly. And so actually during my time as assistant city manager, myself and the other assistant city manager developed sort of a policy basically saying that, hey, here are the limitations that you have for it here. And we've oscillated on whether to make it an FTE or a contract position to have a grant administrator position. And often we decided just to do a contract position to have somebody administer these grants. And so there's a vetting process now in which, departments and directors have to go through to apply for the grants, basically showing that they acknowledge that this is it. Here's a replacement cycle to be on this, you know, whatever depreciation schedule, whatever it needs to be on, as well as working with the grant administrator for the reporting requirements.
Thank you, Bart. Council, do you have any follow-up questions?
No questions at this time.
How do you build trust and credibility in a community where residents, businesses, and elected officials may have competing interests?
Yeah, and I think that happens sometimes with all of those. The trust and credibility is, as a manager, it's just being authentic. Authentic and honest in yourself, as transparent as possible, with no hidden agendas. You know, people, residents or business owners or whatever, they trust the government that they feel cares for them. And so by just listening or explaining the reason why, or taking the time to say, this is why we did this, or this is what I was thinking, without an agenda or without, lack of a better term, shenanigans or stuff going on behind closed doors, you can build that trust by just establishing those relationships, understanding where people are coming from. And that doesn't mean you're going to agree on everything. You're not going to agree on everything, but you can agree to disagree in a respectful manner and say, here's where I'm coming from. We've lost the ability to understand other people's perspectives sometimes, I think, in society. And so this is a part of that. I understand your perspective. Here is mine. Here's why we did this. And just being authentic and open about it and available for them to talk to you about it.
Thank you. Council, do you have any follow-up questions?
Councilman Sarstein.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Hinkle, a number of city departments, most of the city departments interact pretty closely with the public and with the industry that supports the community. What's your experience with departments essentially siloing themselves from the community they serve and not reaching out for input and feedback when they're, let's say, they're adjusting their fee schedule or a proposing ordinance or something that will impact the community and the industry?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Good question. We see siloed operations happen a couple of different ways, right? So in the manner you're indicating is they've siloed themselves from the community at large, essentially the people that we're working for. And so that is a city manager function to make sure that doesn't happen, to be honest. That's some of that accountability perspective that needs to happen. Open communication, frequent communication, and why we're doing this. Something like a rate change or a fee change, something significant that's going to affect the community at large like that, they should be hearing about it the first time when it's on the agenda or comes up on that, you know, second or fourth Tuesday. It should be something that's talked about or discussed or brought to the public before then. So that would be a city manager function to break down those barriers and make sure that doesn't happen. The other part of the silo is we have departments that operate silo from other departments within the city. I think it's important. I mentioned this earlier, I think, about how everybody understands sort of each department has a mission. I've seen mission statements on the website about each individual department. Well, how does their mission statements then go up into the mission of the city? How does this day-to-day activity or this project, this initiative that I'm doing, how does that fulfill council's priorities? And so that understanding there, and I'm a big proponent of having all the directors and deputy directors as well, if appropriate, be in a room on a regular basis just to talk about what they have going on in theirs, because and rightfully so, good for them. They're passionate about their respective field, but they feel that's the most important department in the city, but a lot of their operations do impact others. And so the more we can be aligned, outward facing, I think that's better. So silos, as a general rule, are bad in all contexts.
Thank you, Bart. Council, do you have any follow-up questions?
Any follow-up questions? No questions at this time.
Moving on to question 15. Bart, describe a time you addressed significant public criticism or controversy.
Let's see. Trying to think of one other than COVID, because COVID's been talked about before, but it's definitely one that still lingers. I can use a police chief one. So we We, the police department, started a partnership with Ring doorbell cameras. I don't know if you remember this being a thing back when they first came out. And essentially, you know, I'll try and be quick here, but essentially what they are offering is for law enforcement agencies to be able to have access to the outward facing doorbell cameras if people like essentially checked a box on their Ring when they were when they were signing up for the service or whatever. And so what that would do is sort of streamline the process for law enforcement during investigations. Say there was a hit and run or a fatality accident out there and there's a Ring doorbell camera facing that area. It would streamline the process to where law enforcement could go directly to Ring and ask as opposed to the individual homeowners. Some of that got lost in translation and it's sort of an uprising as to invasion of privacy and how police are accessing doorbell cameras and things like that in private residence and whatnot.
Hinkle,
so
we can't hear you. Just a second, please. We lost your audio.
I can hear you, Bart, so I'm not sure.
Yes, yours.
Tom, you want to talk and let us know if we can hear you?
Yeah, can you hear me? I'm talking right now.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can't hear you, Tom, either. The clerk's checking the soundboard just a moment.
Yeah, thank you.
It must be in City Hall because my speakers and everything are working here.
Mr. Hinkle, you want to speak again? Let us.
That was very, very quiet. Couldn't really hear you.
Thanks, Anthony. Mr. Hinkle, can you hear us? Give us a thumbs up. Or
I barely can, but I can.
Oh, we can hear you now, though. We have progress. That was our soundboard. It was our soundboard. Sorry to interrupt your question, Mr. Hinkle. Sorry about that. Or your answer.
Well, that's no problem. Where was the last thing you heard? Because whatever you didn't hear, it was very profound.
Yeah.
I think the last we heard was access to the Ring cameras, you know, through the police department. It would streamline your process.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so as a police department, you could go through Ring camera and get access to outward-facing doorbell camera, things like that. Well, the general public was a variety of things. They were either upset about it or confused about exactly what it was or whatever. But there was quite a few upset individuals about it, thinking that there was an overstepping of invasion of privacy, things like that. And I get it. Knowing now what they thought, I agree, but what they thought wasn't what was happening. And so we had a series of canned releases, Q&As, things like that go out. But ultimately what happened is I ended up hosting three or four town halls in which I wanted everybody to show up, ask me questions, I'll explain it. And so that was it. Did that pretty much answer everybody's questions, alleviated their concerns, and moved on. But had we just done it via Facebook or postings or things like that, you know how that goes, it would not have probably been very successful. So the importance of getting in the same room and hearing the concerns and talking it over with them was evident that was what they needed and the appropriate thing to do.
Thank you, Bart. Council, do you have any follow-up questions?
Have any questions for Mr. Hinkle on this subject? No further questions at this time.
Okay. Bart, how would you approach relationships with regional, state, tribal and federal partners.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a good framework and an existing partnership already there. You know, so obviously one of the main things to do would be to continue what's already been built over previous administrations. Introducing myself, and while that working relationship may already exist, now you start to get to know people on the personal level and build that personal trust. But it is, you know, my experience with Valdez Native Tribe, of course, with the Coast Guard, Alyeska was there, the schools, I mean, all of the similar relations that municipalities usually have, hospital, things like that, all of those I developed and cultivated and had my own relationships with them in Valdez. And really, again, it's about, you know, meeting with them, no agenda, just being yourself and authentic, and saying, how can we help one another? And there's power when there's alignment. I think that was referenced when in the trilateral agreement that you folks have in place, the power that it has when you go to Juneau or go to D.C. When a community can show that they're aligned on multiple fronts, they're better served. And so as we try and contact these stakeholders and align with them, that we're keeping that in mind. And then you can formalize some of that stuff, of course, in MOAs and MOUs for times of emergencies, things like that, understanding. An example of that would be, we utilized, one with the Coast Guard, where in the case of, let's say, a huge incident, let's call it an active shooter at the schools or something, in which we need more security perimeter personnel. We had reached out to the Coast Guard and signed an MOA with them saying that they would be able to provide that uniformed presence for us while law enforcement, handled the law enforcement activities. They wouldn't be armed or anything, the Coast Guard wouldn't, but they would be security personnel, and they'd also manage the reunification points, things like that. So partnerships are important, and particularly in communities that are self-reliant.
Thank you, Bart. Any further questions from the council?
No further questions at this time.
Bart, what would your priorities be during your first 6 months should you become city manager?
For a good portion of that time, the priority would be listening and observing. A lot can be done by closing these and opening these, so to speak. I don't have those existing relationships. Cultivating those, introducing those myself. I've talked a lot about relationships, and that goes with not only the stakeholders, the council, but it also goes to the first line of supervisors, the entry level employees. So just building that sort of relationship, letting people know who I am, what I'm about, setting forth expectations. But initially, it's a lot of observation and a lot of learning, a lot of talking with the subject matter experts. There's very knowledgeable people there. Usually the city clerks are a very good source of information. The deputy city manager in this case has held a number of roles within the city and been there for a while. All of that information is good stuff to process initially. Coming in with no agenda and no idea as to this is the way things need to go, but just assessing and evaluating, observing. After that, you can move into some sort of, well, I've noticed this, maybe there's some operational efficiencies here, identifying some of those things. And then when you start getting, I believe, probably to the 6 month point, particularly if the timing is right, you're kind of mid budget at that point, I believe, then you can start kind of identifying, measurable outcomes and changes that you want to try and have. You identify them, identify what success is addressing them. But again, for the first 6 months, I don't want to sound like I'm not doing a job, but it's a lot of, observing and assessing and learning, the new environment and cultivating those new relationships.
Thank you. Council, do you have any questions?
No further questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Bart, please describe a strategic initiative you led from concept through implementation.
I'm gonna go with the Narcan program. We had a couple of pretty visible overdoses in the community, visible like the public gas station, things like that. And so I developed, and with the collaboration with the HR director at the time and the fire chief, we developed a citywide Narcan training program, and I procured and all of the Narcan necessary to outfit every single city of Valdez vehicle with Narcan. Every employee was trained. We had a mandatory training, closed the city early one afternoon, closed at 2 o'clock or whatever, had mandatory training. Everybody got trained in the application, identifying the application of Narcan, got signed off on it, was given Narcan for their vehicles. In addition, Narcan was co-located with all the AEDs, and it specifically located down at the harbor bathrooms and laundry facilities, and for at the harbor master's office for any boats to come and take the supplies they needed. And that program continues today. It's hard to prove a negative, but everybody knows that there's Narcan next to the AED in a city Valdez building. That includes schools, airports, the port facilities, and again, all the employees were trained in it, and every city vehicle has it in their glove compartment.
Thank you, Bart. Council, do you have any follow-up questions?
No further questions at this time. Thank you.
So, Bart, this is the last scripted question. This is a scenario-based question. A major storm disrupts marine deliveries, fuel shipments are delayed, and residents are concerned about supply shortages. Walk us through your first 48 hours as city manager in this situation.
All right. So this would be an occasion in which in Valdez, we have what was called a short team. So it was a smaller group of people assigned to the incident management teams, kind of the decision makers of whether to activate the entire incident management team. So that would be the first thing. And for, I'll backtrack just a little bit on that. A lot of times those are the groups that met at like 2 a.m. when we had an earthquake out there and we were monitoring tsunami and, you know, time and what that was going to look like. We were going to activate sound and sirens, things like that. In this circumstance, maybe look at that smaller group, say, hey, do we need to activate the larger group? I'm assuming, I briefly looked over the emergency operations plan. I'm assuming there's some guidance and whatnot in there. So that would be a guiding document. We'll move forward from there. And I'm going kind of in no particular order here, so to speak, other than activating the short team. But you have MOAs and MOUs for situations like that in which you can sort of access private sort of stockpiles. And so maybe some of that exists. You might have some reserves that the city might have on hand. One of the most important things you're going to do in that first 48 hours in dealing with something like this, there's communication from the city. There's communication to, frankly, Mr. Mayor saying, hey, here's what's going on. Here's what we got planned. It's also vitally important that you set up some sort of a communication cadence with the public, a place where they can go to ask questions, a place where you can go to disseminate information. And so that's going to be the biggest thing. That's always, whether it's an after action review or whatever, communication, communication, communication. And so we talk about that trust in government. If we as local government can get the word out and say, hey, we're aware of this, here's what we know, we will update you in 6 hours, and they know where to go get that information, you're going to quell a lot of that unrest and uneasiness that the public has about that. And then you continue to work the problems in the background, right? How are you going to procure? What are our advantages to get this, or what are our options, to get the supplies in here? Things like that. But the updating and the communication cadence to the public is vitally important to the perception that you're doing your job and doing it well. And it's going to solve a lot of uneasiness that they may have.
Thank you, Bart. Council, do you have any questions related to Bart's answer?
No further questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. So, Bart, we are now turning it over to you. We've peppered you with questions. Do you have any questions for the council?
Yeah, what are we at? About 20 minutes or so?
Yes.
All right. I don't know that we'll take all of that. Again, before I get to the question, I just want to say I appreciate your attentiveness. I know I was speaking with Mr. Young earlier this week, and I said between oral boards and courtroom testimony, that is some of the longest, most mentally taxing days a person can have. So I appreciate your attentiveness here during this. My question, I guess, for anybody, I'll address it to Mr. Mayor, and you can go from there. What does success look like for you for the next city manager, the first 6 months, and then ultimately the tenure? Like, what would you define success as for that individual?
Okay. I'm trying to get the council members to throw some ideas at me here because we've got a priority system for requests to the state and the federal government, and our main priorities there are the Captain's Bay Road. Is a major issue for us. Airlines, of course, in and out, and the cost of running an airline. The airport is airport issues. And also being able to take care of all the industry in the community. You need docks, and we're working with our trilateral group for energy. We're looking forward to having some resolve to our energy costs in this community, as many other communities, I'm sure, are having the same problem. Anything you want to add? Councilman Chastain.
Yeah, thank you. This is Zach Chastain. So I think to answer your question in a couple steps, in the first 6 months, what I would envision a successful city manager doing is getting to understand the community and the nuances of the community. Pretty much as you mentioned earlier in the interview, understanding the directors, leaning on the directors, figuring out what the strengths and weaknesses are, and then building on those. We have a pretty phenomenal set of directors, and each one has different strengths and weaknesses. I asked the question earlier on siloing, where decisions are made in a silo and then brought to council, and that's enacted, and that's the first time industry or the community hears about those. That's a concern of mine. So digging into that, I think, would be a priority as well. Well, I say a priority. I mean, in the first 6 months to a year, I think that's something important to do, is really take a look at that and make sure that the community is involved before it even gets to council, whether that's through a working group with industry or a town hall, like you mentioned earlier, related to your ring camera question and stuff like that. I think concurrent with that, working through the city's budget and the way the city operates, I think, is pretty critical as well. And that if you look at our budgets of the past, for the most part, council has authorized a 3% increase year over year, sometimes a 0% increase, and oftentimes we'll get back 3.2% increases for the city's budget. And I think a comprehensive look at how we're spending money and what we're doing is going to be critical as well within the next year or two to ensure that we're operating efficiently and we're providing the services the community needs. That's a very long answer to a short question.
That was perfect. Thank you very much for that.
Any further questions or comments? Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I can just add on to that, and I'll be a little more brief. What I would expect from a city manager coming in would be what you talked about earlier, would be coming in and observing how everyone interacts with each other and the city interacts with the community, listening both to staff and to the community. Building relationships between all the stakeholders within the city, the city staff and the community, and then evaluating and moving forward with positive plans of action where it would be appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, thank you.
We have Councilmember Longo raise his hand.
Okay. Councilman Longo.
Yes, so I agree with everything that council has already said, and I'd like to add, like, team building and ensuring that the positions in the city stay filled and, you know, get filled if there are any vacancies.
Okay. Thank you, Councilman Longo. Councilman Coleman.
Yeah, thank you. Great question. And I think if we're here long enough, you ask a question, you're going to get seven different answers. That's the beauty of working for multiple people. And so, it depends on the stage that you're in, right? You know, your level of success based off, you know, how long you've been here. I think it's incremental. We expect more over time. As you, like you do, like you build relationships and you are doing these things that you say are going to do, you just add on to that. And I think for me, accountability is a really high standard, is not only being accountable for your actions, but holding other people accountable for what they're doing. So just going to add to that. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Councilman Luby.
I guess it's my turn now. I also agree with what everybody else has said as well. And just kind of as an add-on, I guess one thing that I would be looking in as city manager, besides building relationships with, you know, staff, community, council, the mayor, industry, and everybody else involved, but also listening, as you said, to everyone. But then when somebody is expecting a response, maybe not ignore them, you know, let them know, hey, yeah, let me look into that. Or, you know, because we've had those issues in the past where they basically just go ignored after, you know, bringing something to a city manager or even staff about stuff. And they just don't hear anything. Not even a no, you know, they're not expecting a yes or a no or an explanation, but, you know, just an explanation. And that would be something I think that's important for the community. I've heard that a lot in the community, actually, that people just don't respond.
Yeah, thank you for that. That goes to the themes that we've talked about as far as accountability and then the public trust within government too. So, you know, just those small little customer service things that we can do that help them feel cared for, and by extension, trust the government.
Okay, any further questions for us?
I'll have one final one. I appreciate all the input on that one, but we didn't quite use up 20 minutes, so I'll ask one more. I guess in your estimation, Would you consider the previous, let's call it 5 years, to have been a good council manager relationship? Are there any imminent issues that need to be addressed right inside the, you know, right out of the gate? Whether it's morale with a certain thing or an issue that's hanging out there. And I'm not asking for examples of the current interim, he's an applicant. If you're from him next, I don't want that. I guess just a more sort of general sort of thing. Is there anything that this manager has to come in and deal with day two that has been lingering out there for a while from previous administrations?
No, from the city council's point of view, those be questions that we hear about after the fact, a lot of issues. The managers has meetings every week with their directors, and they discuss their issues of morale that you mentioned. But that's we as a council don't necessarily deal with that issue unless it's a union, but we deal with voting on contracts with their employees in the city of Unalaska. And so I kind of think that it'll be, as far as morale issues, we hear about it probably. A lot of this second and third hand issue. Some employees don't want to talk about it with council members, and some just, that's their first place they go, figuring they're going to get changes. And in case, some cases that does happen and comes back to the council. At a city council meeting, and it's kind of embarrassing for a city manager to take care of it in the first place, but that's where we were in the past and what we've dealt with the past several city managers. Anything else? Mr. Bell?
I was just going to say, I think we have an excellent city council, and with good communication with the city manager, definitely have a positive effect on this community.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, I agree with Councilman Bell. I think if you were selected and you came in, what you'd be running into on day one is a very functional city that really needs some fine-tuning and some process. I think we lack definitive process, and I think we've gotten away from following things like the ordinance and the community law and stuff like that. And that's, I think, on day one, what you'll be walking into. At the 6-month mark, I'm sure you'll see some improvements, and at a year, it'll be much better.
Thank you for making a very coherent response out of a poorly worded question. So I appreciate that input. And I have no further questions at this time, Mr. Young.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Anybody else? Councilman Coleman's got.
Well, it is a matter of public record that we do have a current lawsuit. So that just being said, yes, say anymore, but that is a something that you would have to step into and deal with right away.
Yep, that I was aware of. Thank you.
So,
okay. Any further questions for us, Mr. Hinkle? Go ahead.
Let's see. We do have a little bit of time. If any of the council members maybe have one last question that they wanted to ask Mr. Hinkle, something maybe didn't come up in the scripted questions, this is your chance to fire away.
Okay. Thank you, Council. You have questions, Councilman Luby.
So during the interview under the strategic thinking and vision, and the question number 17 in what your priorities would be in the first 6 months, you had mentioned one of them would be letting people know who you are and what you're about. So if I was to come up to you and say, who are you and what are you about? What would you tell us?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would go over my background a little bit. I mean, I don't need to repeat my work history necessarily to people, but if they want to know like what I'm about, I would talk about my leadership style and say, hey, here's it. If we're looking at like a couple of adjectives, I would say steady, you know, mild mannered, not highs, not lows. I'm authentic, and I value professional development and growth within the organization. Those are three easy ones to remember. That's what I'd be about. If there was somebody that I was supervising and they were concerned about my philosophy as a manager, and it is to develop them as much as possible, to mentor them and to support them. And the accountability aspect is a high standard set. With that comes high support. And so the accountability is that if we fall short on an initiative or something that's forward facing, that's my fault. That's the city manager's fault. I'm the ones held accountable for failings that happen in the public. You folks will hold me accountable. I'll take that. The accountability that gets trickled down to the directors, whatever, is a conversation between me and them and a closed door thing. And we address where I felt their deficiencies were, and we deal with their accountability on a one-on-one. But publicly, that's me. Successes of initiatives and things like that that are brought about by individual departments or directors or whatever, that's a success. That's their success to have. But the failures are mine to incur.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
See a hand raised.
Do you have any more for us?
Mr. Mayor, we have Mr. Longo raised his hand.
Councilman Longo.
Yes. If selected, what level of commitment can the city expect from you in terms of tenure and long-term service to the community?
Yeah, thank you for that. I've looked at things in about 5-year increments. So I would be comfortable with that sort of a time frame. It's an evaluation at that point. I enjoy the work. I think I have a skill set that is beneficial to the work, beneficial to the community of Unalaska. As long as I enjoy it, you enjoy the work I'm doing, and we're a community moving forward. I don't know if there's an end date per se, but I've been looking at this with the going into this with a 5-year sort of benchmark sort of thing either way. All the things we just talked about, what success looks like in 6 months and a year. I can't in good conscience have applied for this thinking, oh, I'm only going to be here a year. You can't do anything. You can't affect these changes you're asking me to change or that I want to do in a year. So realistically looking at it, you're looking at a multi-year commitment. And so that's why 5 is a nice round number. 5 gets me to a certain age and a good evaluation of my career moves after that. So that's the best answer I can give for you. My commitment that if selected, it's not going to be a short-term, seasonal sort of thing. If you're looking for a 20-year manager, I can't commit to that either, but I'm looking at 5-year increments and a good work plan, which we've discussed a framework of a very good sort of first 6-month year, 18-month sort of direction. So there's work to be done and work to keep busy for those 3 to 5 years, and 5 years is my benchmark that I looked at. I appreciate the question.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Councilman Longo. Okay. Thank you for taking your time to sit with us this afternoon, and appreciate your comments. And I'd ask Mr. Young to be calling you. You're next. You're up.
Art, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for your flexibility making this a weekend interview work for us. We appreciate that. Thank you for your candor and straightforward answers. At this point in time, the council is going to finish their remaining interview. Then they will begin their discussion about what their next steps look like, how they want to proceed. I will follow up with you sometime early next week with more information regarding what the council has decided. You're, of course, free to contact me at any point in time, but we really appreciate your time today. It has been a great conversation. You are free to go, and we will be in touch.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
Yes, thank you, Mark. Thank you. Okay, yeah, we'll take a short break here and be back here at 10 to 5.